Chapter 12. The Lesson. We left her slumbering, back in the hole where they threw her, jaw clenched tight, cheeks wet with hateful tears. A wise woman once said there is no hell so cruel as powerlessness, sinner, but even rage must surrender to sleep eventually, and curled into a ball, silent and utterly spent at last, the Grail's bloodshot eyes slipped closed. But there is no rest for the wicked, as they say. And as Dior drifted into the peaceful still of slumber, we crawled out from beneath her ashen hair and took once more to the wing, flitting up through the dungeons and into the dun above. My heart was heavy, guilt and fervour both. Though I'd have gladly seen the Grail freed, I couldn't help but see the hand of the Almighty again here, at work even in Dior's failure. We'd not been brought to the city where Mother Marin slumbered, only to abandon it. We were meant to be here, and I was meant to find her. The historian conspicuously cleared his throat, turning to a fresh page. The last of the Liathi narrowed her eyes, glowering across the water. You have a question, sinner. I have many, Jean-Francois sighed, but I shall settle upon one, for now at least. Why was your priore sleeping in Dunmergen? The monster shrugged. Who can know? It was said she was born in the Osway centuries back. Perhaps she felt safest there. It is a dangerous thing to enter the eventide, that sleep deeper than death. Master Wulfric told me that Marin had slumbered for more than a century, and even thralls will die of old age in that time. It takes... You misunderstand me, Mademoiselle Castilla. I do not ask why she chose Dunmergen specifically. I ask why was your mother of monsters asleep in the first place? The last Liathi sighed, lips pursed behind her silver cage. How much do you know of the Wars of the Blood, sinner? How much has your mistress told you about that righteous crusade?
Enough to know your so-called righteous crusade ended in complete failure.
Not complete, though lying historians would tell it so.
Selene shook her head, dark eyes glittering.
The mortal church sought to eradicate the Redeemer's line, and Fabian and his Knights of the Blood to destroy we who safeguarded it. And they did achieve a kind of victory. When the Emperor's Holy Legions finally sacked the Arvsenkt capital at Cherbourg, when Ilya herself was rendered unto dust, hope seemed utterly lost. Mortal histories purged all record of the heresy. Kith chroniclers spoke of the Yasana in hateful whispers. But the faithful endured. Only four of them. Four of God knows how many. But still, enough to carry the dream out of that cataclysm. A dream of saving this world.
Rats will flee a sinking ship, I suppose. Even immortal ones.
You mock, she sighed. Again. But you have no conception of what was lost that night. Ilya alone carried countless Kith souls within her body, all of them damned to hell with her death. How many others were condemned to the abyss as Cherbourg burned?
It depends how many your depraved cult had cannibalized, I suppose.
The historian brushed a golden curl from his eyes.
In the end, we all get the hell we deserve.
So it is said,
the Liathi nodded.
And so it was thought. Too close to heaven had Ilya's brood flown, and in their hubris it seemed they had caused the extinction of the Redeemer's dynasty. But it was still whispered, hoped, prayed, that some remnant of Isan's bloodline might have endured,
And so those four faithful who survived the Wars of the Blood made a pact. They would scatter to the corners of the realm, never more together in one place, lest they be caught. And Ilya's dream extinguished forever. And alone, they would keep faithful vigil in the dark, looking for signs of the Redeemer's line, that hope still remained for this world, and that their dream was not truly dead. The last Liathi looked down at her hands, and the Marquis was surprised to see them trembling. Sighing, the monstress entwined her fingers to halt the shakes. But time is a terrible thing, sinner. And to carry the burden of hundreds of souls over hundreds of years is a weight that few can bear. The voices of the damned call to you in your sleep. Their memories bleed into your own until you know not what is yours and what is theirs. The four knew that madness would come for them all eventually, and so to ease their burden, it was decided only two would ever be awake at once. The others would slumber in the eventide, to be woken in turn after a century of watchfulness. And so it was. Wulfric in San Eves, Genoa in Cairnheim, Oleander in Augustine, and Marin, eldest of the four, neath Mergen. Selene shook her head in wonder. Four of them, to carry the weight of 10,000 damned souls, the fate of the world on their shoulders. But now, Genoa was lost, Wulfric gone. Oleander might have been a million miles away, yet I was still certain God had brought us to Mergen for Marin. And so, as Dior slumbered in her cell, we set out to search for our eldest once more. There was no hide nor hole in the city our wings could not reach, save those of the Holy Sepulchre, and we knew no fear at that. An ancient vampire could never sleep on hallowed ground. And so we started in the sewers, those dark tunnels twisting under Porton, and out to the sea. Empty-handed, we turned next to the cellars in Olton, the oldest in the capital, most likely to house the mother. The city's necropolis was next, a lone red moth flitting among the houses of the dead. And there, at last, we found a sliver of promise carved upon the tomb of a mason long dead, the sigil of the Yesana. My heart soared at the sight of those twin skulls, that chalice between. They were small, subtle, carved in old stone by the hand of one long gone to dust. But still, this was proof. The mother lay somewhere in these ruins. All hope was not yet lost. But hateful dawn was coming now, and I too needed to sleep, to hunt, to heal. Answers still beyond our reach. In frustration, we returned to the dun, soaring over her scarred battlements. The walls were peopled with scorched, gathered at flaming braziers and handing around a hip flask. It was a horrid-smelling brew they were sipping, conjured from potato peel and rotting weeds in the dun's distillery, a brand of Ossian rotgut known as the Black. Its stench is akin to cabbage mixed with cat urine, and we are told the taste is little better. We soared over those awful cages in the bailey, past the ironworks, poor Baptiste Sir Ismail bent over his forge. We flitted through bustling corridors, past the nine-sword statue, her legendary blade raised in her granite fist. But we slowed our flight, pressing wings to the rafters as four figures trudged up the grand stair below. The first was Chiara, looking dour, storm clouds over her brow. Behind her walked the two Ossian gallants who'd stood on guard outside Nikita's chambers, rescuing Dior from her treacherous heels. Their jaws were squared,
hands on their swords, green eyes fixed on the figure between them. Aaron da Costa. He wore only leather breeches and a leather collar fixed about his throat. His handsome face was framed by golden hair, the scar gifted to him by my dark marker, Lore Vos herself, cutting hook-shaped down his brow and cheek. But on his back and arms we saw new scars, dark lines tracing the path once graced by the Aegis of San Michon. They'd carved out his ink, we realized, filling the wounds with ash so they'd no longer heal when he awoke each sunset, a relief from his endless pain. Whoever had done the work was an artiste, the Dragan, or his bride Alex, perhaps. Aaron's tattoos had lost none of their splendor. But where once they'd shone silver, now they were black as night. Aaron's head was hung low, hands clasped before him. Praying, we realized. Again, we felt that kinship with this fallen son of Avalane, to see he'd not abandoned his faith. Though we knew him not, still we feared for him. And so, though dawn was near, we found ourselves following as he was led along the landing to the boudoir of the Count and Contessa Divock. Stepping into the foyer, they were greeted by the sight of young Isla in her beautiful gown, exiting Nikita's chambers. Her mouth was curled in a small smile, arms laden with bloody sheets. She glanced up as they entered, eyes on the former lord of her city, her lips smeared red.
"Capitaine,"
she whispered, smile fading.
"Oh no, not you too."
Aaron met her gaze, heartbreak plain on his face. One more soul he'd failed to safeguard. One more child brought to her knees before these monsters.
"Courage, love," he whispered. "God has not forsaken you."
Kiara scowled at the girl, and Isla lowered her eyes, backing away with her bloody burden. Flitting past Lily's chamber, we saw the Contessa seated at a desk, reading some dusty tome by dimmest moonlight. She was still clad in those two strips of sheer black silk, dark lips pursed as she turned a page. Her great wolf, Prince, was asleep at her feet, and a pretty man was sprawled naked upon her sheets, throat punctured, chest rising and falling. We recalled her words to Dior, her questions about the Asana. Lily was ancient enough to remember the fall of Charbourg, the crusade against my kin. And though Nikita was the dread lord of this kingdom, we now knew here, in her, lay our truest threat.
"Move!"
One of the Scorch growled, shoving Aaron's shoulder. Jaw set, Aaron obeyed. He was thirsting, we could tell, his pallor closer to death, shadows beneath his eyes. Yet though he was only a fledgling, we could see already how the becoming had affected him. He may have been handsome in life, but now he was awfully, fearfully beautiful, pale and fey and deathless. His skin was smooth, golden locks flowing down his bare back, thin beard trimmed razor sharp, eyes ablaze at the scent in the air. As Kiara drew back the doors to Nikita's boudoir, it washed over all of us in a flood, Aaron's long lashes fluttering on his cheeks, fangs bared in a snarl of perfect animal hunger. Blood. The Count Divock awaited within. He was sat on a plush wooden chair of red velvet and dark ironwood, the tall window behind looking out on the Gulf of Wolves. The grand four-poster was dressed with fresh sheets, the bodies from his earlier feast cleared away by the dutiful worm. But the perfume of murder still stained the room. An easel and canvas stood in one corner, more canvases scattered about, stripped from the walls and painted on their blank sides. They were portraits, nameless beauties, male and female, though several studies of Lily and Chiara, and even young Isla could be seen among them. The Count Divock obviously considered himself an artiste in private, and though their flair was undeniable, there was something gauche and altogether brutish about the pieces. Not only had the artwork of Mergen been destroyed to serve as their bones, but each had been painted wholly and solely in blood. Nikita wore a black silk robe tied loosely at his waist, little left to the imagination. Long ink-black hair spilled over his broad shoulders, the marble plains and valleys of his bare chest, the hills of muscle running down his belly. His brow was crowned with iron thorns, his bottomless eyes fixed on Aaron, cold and dark as the waters in the bay.
"Good eve, golden one."
Aaron made no reply, fists clenched at his side. Nikita glanced to his daughter, the young scorched standing beside her, his head tilted. The gallants bowed low before their master, departing swift at his unspoken command. But Chiara lingered.
"Daughter?"
Nikita asked, one brow arched.
"Priore," she replied, her voice strangely gentle. "I wonder, might we speak alone?"
The black heart smiled soft.
"Anon, child, when I am done."
The wolf mother bowed her head, lips thin. She was a slayer of the Ossian wilds, murderer of countless men and women and children. The beast who had filled those cages in the courtyard to brimming. And yet, for a moment, she seemed a green maid.
"Your ladder filled, your line strengthened, the black lion slain." Chiara wrung her hands, meeting his eyes. "Do my gifts not please ye?"
"They do."
Nikita's gaze flickered to Aaron, his smile widening.
"They shall."
"Then can we not—"
"Forget not thy place, wolf mother."
There was iron in Nikita's voice now, and his daughter flinched when he spoke. As Chiara searched that dark, unblinking gaze, we saw no light nor warmth in it.
"My right hand art thou," Nikita said. "Of all my court, stand ye the tallest. Be satisfied, my blood, with the blessings thou hast, for what is given can be taken away."
The wolf mother lowered her eyes again at that, bowing deep.
"My laird," she whispered.
And with a sidelong scowl at Aaron, Chiara departed, closing the doors behind. Silence fell over the boudoir, save for the song of the sea. Nikita's dark gaze fell once more upon Aaron, that dreadful smile lingering on his lips.
"Solitude at last," he said.
Aaron made no reply. We knew that the ancient's blood was at work in the young capitaine. He had supped only once of Nikita's wrist, but even that is enough to forge a bond, same as we had seen budding between Diu and Lily. Nikita was inside of Aaron now, and as we watched from above, we could see how much effort it took for the lordling to ignore that pale incubus as he reached down slow, unbinding the ties of his robe.
"Thirst dost thou?"
Nikita asked, voice low and deep. But still, the Capitaine of Avalane made no sound.
"Astonishing how swift the hunger rises,"
Nikita mused.
"Glut thyself to brimming, and thou shalt know but one night's peace before torment begins anew. All too well I know the pain that grips thee, golden one. All too well I know thy need.
Nikita plucked a goblet of sparkling crystal from the table beside him. Eyes still locked on Aaron, the Count lifted his wrist to his mouth, a soft hiss slipping his lips as he bit deep. Holding the goblet beneath his opened vein, he willed his ancient blood to spill into the cup, and though high in the ceiling above, still our wings trembled at the scent. That potency, that power, bathing the whole shivering world red.
Come, Nikita proffered the goblet. Drink.
Aaron stood with fists clenched, defiant.
Mercy, but I am not thirsty.
The black heart only smiled. Setting aside the goblet, he met Aaron's eyes and shrugged his robe off his shoulders, leaving every graven inch of his perfect body unveiled.
Another kind of feast they desire. Thou art but young in the blood, after all. Still ye remember the mortal man ye used to be, his hungers, his needs. In all of these, can Nikita well oblige thee?
Aaron stood in that boudoir, a pale droplet at the shores of a black ocean. His eyes roamed the peril of Nikita's body, his bloodless lips curling as he hissed.
You sicken me. Thy mouth protests, but I see the emptiness in thy soul.
Nikita reclined on the velvet, naked and perfect.
And I shall see thee filled, golden one. Nights of wonder await thee, nights of bliss and blood, of pain and power and pleasure, all entwined. Nikita shall be thy mentor, thy monarch, thy master. Never, Aaron replied, never. Never be a long time in accounting. Know ye what I am, what I do? I know you are all I was raised to despise, the lordling spat. I know you are a devil wearing an angel's guise. But though you may bend my mind, for all your power you cannot touch my heart. So hear me now, monster, then do as you will. All you shall have from me will be stolen, never surrendered. I shall die before ever I call you master of my own will.
Nikita chuckled, low and long.
Thou art noble-born, we.
He waved his hand, as if to banish the question.
Answer not. I smell its stench upon thee. I have met many who thought themselves born high in my years, Aaron da Costa, and in the end I saw all of them on their knees.
The black heart toyed with the edge of his goblet, smile fading.
I myself was not noble-born, that is. A shepherd's son was I birthed, on the dirt floor of a squalid hovel in Talhost. The hamlet where I lived does not even exist anymore. My father was a cruel man. Men raised in cruel climes often are. But in his cruelty there was a kind of wisdom. And 641 years later, still I remember the greatest lesson he taught me. Wouldst thou like to know, Golden One, what it was?
Aaron remained mute, glancing to the window, the fireplace, searching for some desperate escape. But Nikita spoke on, eyes fixed on his prey.
On a winter's eve in my 8th year, one of our ewes was torn apart by wolves. I found her body. There was so much blood, I could taste the iron in the air. A lamb, had she, stood in the snow, bleating its fear, and my father told me to kill it. Always could we use more meat for the pot. Yet though I told him done was the deed, instead I hid the lamb in our barn, fed her by hand, slept with her at nights to keep her warm. She was the first thing in this world I truly loved.
Nikita smiled, midnight eyes twinkling.
Traitor, I named her. One Priedi, father summoned us for supper, and though we were oft hungry, that night we had a feast laid out, a fine hot stew of good fresh meat. But after father urged me to eat all I could, out in the barn he took me, and there he showed me the fresh flayed hide splayed upon the wall, and the empty loft where my treasure had been hid. And I understood then who it was that filled my gurgling belly, and he beat me to within an inch of my life, my dear father. Beat me so hard that all I had eaten came back up to greet me, the remnants of my first love spraying over the very hands I had raised her with.
Is this tale meant to make me pity you?
Aaron growled, eyes flashing.
You, who destroyed my city, who slaughtered a nation.
'Tis meant to impart a lesson, as I said, the most important in life.
The ancient leaned forward, eyes fixing the lordling to the floor.
What makes ye care, makes ye weak. The cruel will use the things ye cherish to strike at the very heart of thee.
Nikita leaned back, parting his legs slightly.
And the black heart is nothing if not cruel, golden one.
Baptiste, Aaron whispered, at last recognizing the threat. Nikita picked up the brimming goblet again, his voice soft and dark as smoke.
Die for him, wouldst thou?
I love him.
The Capitaine clenched his fists, trembling now.
Of course I would.
The Count Divok smiled, and as those bottomless eyes bored into the lordling's, the ancient willed his blood down, down. His member stirring now on his thigh, swelling with the warmth and life he'd stolen from those poor souls murdered in his bed.
How benevolent a master, then, be great Nikita. For he commands not that he die, Aaron da Costa.
The black heart slipped one hand down to his nethers, running one slow fingertip up his smooth and thudding length.
Only that ye kneel.
Nikita held the goblet up to the light, studying his blood within, dark, warm, gleaming. With lips curled, he tilted the crystal, letting a few drops spill onto his bare chest, over one tight nipple, a splash of ruby onto polished marble. Aaron's jaw was clenched, but though he tried to look away, the fledgling found himself staring, lips parted. And with eyes still locked on the young Capitaine, Nikita tilted the glass farther, blood scent kissing the air as he poured the entire goblet over himself, rivulets running down his smooth torso, the hard muscle of his belly, down, down to his member, now standing tall and taut between them. Here he paid special attentions, upending the goblet entirely, painting his length and the smooth pouch beneath, letting the last of it drip, drip onto the tip of his swollen crown.
Tell me, beauty, he breathed, art thou still not thirsty?
Aaron gritted his teeth, racked with despair. To fight, to bleed, to die, this he would gladly do. But to condemn his paramour to the fire, for pride's sake? Would he break before he bent, we wondered. Would he forsake his beloved rather than his freedom? And we saw then why Nikita Divok called himself Blackheart. Looking down into the hell below, we caught a glimpse of the abyss that yawned within his breast, a hint of the perfect evil that coiled beneath the skin of this pale prince of night.
"You will not hurt him," the lordling whispered. "I vow it, so long as thou shalt give thyself utterly, willingly, unto me."
The black heart smiled, dark as all lights dying.
"Kneel before me, Aran da Costa."
Aran stood frozen, hands curled into helpless fists. We could feel the thoughts ringing in his skull, nothing in him but rage and hate and the bleakest shade of despair. And head hung low, no choice left him. The lordling finally obeyed, stepping forward like a man toward the gallows, and slipping down to his knees before that black throne. Nikita dipped his thumb into the blood pooling at his navel, reaching out toward his prey. Aran flinched, steeling his will, closing his eyes as that thumb was pressed to his lips, smearing them with red, slipping between his teeth into his mouth.
"What is my name, Golden One?"
That dark prince breathed, withdrawing his hand.
"Keita," Aran whispered. "No."
Dark eyes flashed, bottomless and wroth.
"What is my name?"
Aran looked up then, his gaze matching the ancient's. Bloodshot blue, staring into burning black, boiling with hatred absolute.
"Master," he hissed.
"Good,"
that devil whispered. "Very good."
One hand snaked out, marble fingers knotted in golden hair.
"Now drink me. Drink. Oh."